I nodded and shuffled forward. The company was very quick to move out of the way, I noticed. Harold pointed at a low hillock just outside the camp beside the road. Stand there and look west. Tell me what you can see, he ordered. I did as I was told. To my front I saw fairly flat fields, empty this early in the season. Here and there were scattered copses, but all in all, open countryside. Beyond the fields I could see the dark shapes of the Pennines forming a barrier from far to the south to beyond my sight to the north. I commented on this. Now then, look behind you, to the east, Harold ordered. I turned, as instructed, to face the east. A river ran from the north to south, not far from the road, and beyond this there were more fields. I could see beyond the fields, dim and distant, the bulky forms of the moors. Not as high as the mountains to the west, but still prominent over the low ground where I stood. Finally, look north, and tell me what you see there. To the north, flat fields and open countryside began to get closer, and the scattered copses denser. The ground started to climb, and there were numerous hills running east of the moors and west of the Pennines. The river snaked from the northwest towards the southeast on the far side of the road, the flat, straight Roman road. I described all of this, and Harold nodded at me. Up ahead in those hills and copses is Cattraeth. It sits on this side of the road, on either side of a stone bridge that crosses the river as it comes down from the mountains. Beyond the river, not far beyond, mind you, the river divides. Dare Street continues to the north through the valley of the Tees and up towards Benicia. The branch runs west through the Pennines to Reged. Between the branches, a few miles away from here, in the angle, as it were, stands an old earthen fort, what we call Stanwick Camp. He paused, and then he raised his eyebrows, asking if I had heard of it. I shook my head.
I've heard of the camp, my lord, but I've never been there, Grettir said.
Splendid, well done, piped in Ethelric, evidently eager to be involved. Grettir bowed at the prince, who apparently had nothing further to add, as he then nodded at Harold to go on. Tabbert tapped his foot impatiently.
Sire, we need to leave this nonsense and get on with the council. We are wasting our time, the earl moaned.
Harold shook his head. No, I don't think so. The lad wants to understand, and I think that's fine. Anyway, he said, ignoring Sabbert and continuing, this was of old a garrison to defend the pathways, and has again been turned into such. All the land ahead of us was Welsh, the kingdom of the Pennines. During the last wars a few years ago, we took advantage of the weakness of the Welsh and their inability to respond and captured this land, just as we did with Eorforwick. He walked up to the top of a small mound and put a hand on my shoulder. We have heard from our spies and agents that the Welsh have recovered from their defeats under Benicia. Their strength has grown, and they are determined to strike back at us. You all have heard the rumours of armies training, equipping, and gathering. Their great kings make talk of war. Their bards, Taliesin and Erin, sing of heroes of the past, and urge their warriors into greater deeds. And we hear mention of a word. He took his hand away from the shoulder and pointed north. The word is Cattraeth. You see, Curdic, Cattraeth lies in a very important location. It sits on the main road from Dara to Benicia, through this valley between the mountains and the moors. It also sits on the road from Reged to what was once the kingdom of the Pennines. Whoever holds Cattraeth dominates this region. If the Welsh of Elmet, Strathclyde, Reged and Manu Gododdin can take it, they would divide Benicia from Dara again. Once again, they would become the most powerful lords in the north, and they would be a threat to us. We would not be safe in our land, not with our fertile plains and our valleys full of grain to tempt them south to reclaim what they believe is theirs.
But, my lord, what of Elmet? I asked.
Oh, yes, what of Elmet? Of course, that is the only Welsh land east of the mountains now. It is also a threat, as you know only too well.
He looked at me and gave me a smile of acknowledgement, and it seemed to me that he was aware of the common man's difficulty as well as moving in the councils of kings. What a king he would have made had he been prince, and not Ethelfric. He went on,
Elmet has kept within its borders until recently, but now they attack us without warning, and with a fairly small force, 100 men or so. A heavy raid, no doubt.
but hardly a threat. Surely they know we would attack them in return. But that is the point. We think it was a mistake. We think that Samnon raided the villa and Wixton without the blessing of Ceredig, because of greed. My eyes widened, and in my mind I saw my mother's jewellery, and a picture of Hussa taunting me with that earring. Harold seemed to read my thoughts. Yes, Curdick, Elmet is part of the North Welsh Alliance. No doubt Elmet has been promised lands in Deira in return for its part in the war. Samlin was already assembling the army, and was kicking his heels at Kilcaria, itching to attack us. He did not need much of an excuse, just the tales of a traitor babbling about amber treasure to save his own skin, or line his own pockets. Just that, and he was over that border in a flash. Harold paused, and looked at the prince as if to see if he wanted to add anything, but Ethelric was smiling and nodding inanely, so he turned back to me. Actually, this hussar has done us a favour, you know, Curdick. Then, seeing my frown, he held up his hand. Oh, I don't mean I approve. It's just that it had not been for the raid, and as a result Wallace taking this company into Elmet, we would not have seen that army heading north. We would not have known to send scouts to follow it. Therefore, we would not have realised it was heading towards Cattraeth. That knowledge confirms to us all the suspicions we already had. Hussa, in effect, has tipped the Welsh hand. Then he also frowned. Still, it will be a hard battle, and dropping his voice added, I hope your father is coming. Then again, addressing all the company, he added, Now, we must press on. The prince and I await Wallace's return to plan the battle. The battle may have already begun, and it will be desperate. Tomorrow, we march to Cattraeth. I watched him disappear with Ethelric and Sabert towards the prince's tent. I then turned to look at the company, and saw that some important facts were sinking in. We were not just attacking Elmet and facing its 500 men, but a much larger force. The company did not know it was 2,000 strong, but they were not stupid, and knew the task ahead was going to be hard. Some of them glared at me, perhaps wishing they could have left in ignorance a few hours longer. "You had to ask, didn't you?" said Edward. Cuthbert, ashen-faced, said nothing, but just swallowed hard. The following day, we continued on our way. Grettir had told us earlier what Harold had repeated, that we were now beyond the borders of what was Deira before a few years ago, and within the old kingdom of Pennine. The local folk kept away from us, but those I saw had the dark hair of the Welsh. Wallace galloped into the camp that night and went straight in to see Harold, Sabbat, and Ethelric. I would have liked to have eavesdropped on that conversation, and perhaps overhear some words of comfort to share with everyone. But Cuthbert and I were given guard duty on the road a few hundred yards from the camp. Just before midnight he pointed out to me a small patrol of warriors armed with bows and spears, standing on a hill half a mile from us. They observed the camp for a few moments, and then disappeared into the gloom. I stayed at the hill, but I told Cuthbert to run to Harold and report what we had seen. As it grew darker, and the noises of animals of the night came to me across the fields, I felt exposed and very alone. The trees and bushes grew shadows, and their shapes distorted and became, in the mind, sentinels of Samlin's army lurking out there, waiting to attack and drag me away to him. It was a relief when, a few moments later, Cuthbert, Harold, Ethelric and Wallace joined me. I pointed out where the scouts that I had been observing us had been. As I did, we noticed that two of the scouts had returned. They made no attempt to hide themselves as they walked down the hill. They held up their hands away from their sides to show that they were no threat. Harold stood up and motioned them forward. When they came up, we saw they were Angles, who then bowed in respect to Ethelric. One of them then spoke. "My prince, I come from Stanwick Camp. I am asked to urge you to hurry on as quickly as you can. Our enemy has come with many men, and my lord believes that an assault on this fortress was imminent. Indeed, I fear it may already have happened." "How long ago did you leave this fortress?" Mrs. Wallace asked him. "We left when the sun was sinking in the sky, perhaps 3 hours ago. We have ridden hard without stopping," said the messenger. "Well then, even at a fast march it must take most of a day to reach the camp," Wallace calculated. "My lord begs you to come fast," urged the messenger once more. Ethelric looked at the messenger, and then back to our camp. I don't know. I think the men need sleep." He looked at Harold and seemed to be pleading for advice. Harold thought for a moment. "I suggest, sire, that we wait the army in 4 hours. We will march straight away thereafter. If we push on without rest, we can reach Stanwick Camp by noon. Etheric nodded. That sounds fair to me. Harold bit his lip. He seemed to be struggling not to shout at the prince to be more decisive, but instead he turned to me. Cuthbert and I were sent to get some rest, and Edward and Aidan were woken and went off grumbling to watch the road. I found it difficult to sleep at first. Images of Samlin One-Eye wielding my uncle's sword, or holding the amber treasure, or caressing Mildreth, came into my mind and tormented me. But sleep I did, and I felt oddly refreshed when Cuthbert shook my shoulder. It was still dark, but in the east there was a faint red glow. The dawn was coming. Just as before, at Calcaria, I wondered if any of us would see the sunset. Then our company rose, and each man drank a little ale or water. Some chewed on salted meat or smoked cheese. I ate an apple I had picked from an orchard we had passed the previous day. Soon we assembled on the road, and Ethelric, now mounted again, waved us on north. We marched on, while the sun rose to our right over the dark moors, and then slowly rolled around to our rear. After we crossed the narrow stone bridge at Catraith, our guides led us along the road a little further until it branched. We turned northwest towards the mountains. After a mile or two, we left the Roman road and veered off it to the right. Eventually, the track we were following climbed a gentle slope and levelled out. Harold halted the army a little way down the slope, and the captains of the company, along with their seconds, went up to take a look. It was then that I got my first look at Stanwick Camp. The ancient fortress was indeed huge. It was surrounded by a deep ditch. The earth from the ditch had been thrown up to create a bank, perhaps 8 feet tall. On top of the bank, a wooden palisade had been built to shelter the defenders. The outer perimeter was lozenge-shaped and ran for some 5 miles around. It was a good mile across from bank to bank and surrounded, for its entire perimeter, by a continuous wall which had sturdy gates to block entry via the roads, if the defenders so desired to deny it. Beyond the gates, the smoke from at least 50 cook fires was rising from as many huts. In the centre was a very large Lord's Hall. Milling around inside the fortress, we could just make out scores of men or women. The walls themselves were manned by several hundred warriors, above whom battle standards fluttered in the early summer breeze. Impressive though the camp might be, the spectacle to the west of it was even more magnificent. For, lined up about 100 paces west of the embankment, was a large body of men. There appeared to be 6 companies of spear-armed foot soldiers from Regid, and a couple from Strathclyde beyond them. In all, they had about 800 warriors formed up in a formation facing east towards Stanwick Camp, with yet more companies in reserve. Scattered here and there, a little ahead of the main body, there were groups of skirmishers armed with bows or slings for the most part, although I could see at least 10 men with a handful of short javelins, and one fellow with a curious wooden device I later heard was called a crossbow. I then spotted more Welsh, this time immediately in front of us and only a few 100 paces distant. There were about 500 of them, and they were lined up facing away from us towards the southern walls of the camp. Even though they faced away from us, there was no mistaking their nationality from their dress and the banners that flapped above their heads. These were the Almatae. Right there, a long bowshot away, was Samlin's army, the army I had come to find. I searched back and forth amongst the enemy for a sight of One-Eye, Husser, or Mildreth, but could see none of them. Were they here? If so, where? The Welsh had arrived at Catraith, and were about to launch their attack. In Stanwick Camp, there were perhaps 500 English warriors at most. In a few minutes, the enemy assault would hit the embankment, and with numbers in their favour, the Welsh would win. Our army was back down the slope to keep it out of view of the enemy. Then Ethelric sent for the captains, and Wallace took me along. Immediately our captains began to argue. One of them, who commanded a company from the moors, was all for marching east to come at the camp from the east side and reinforce it. Wallace and Harold were in favour of attacking now, straight into the back of the Almatae and taking them by surprise. "That's lunacy and suicide. In fact, this whole battle is. I say we pull back and hold the bridge at Catraith," Sabbath said. "No, we must attack," I responded vehemently. Sabbat span round and glared at me.
Silence, boy, he hissed.
I will not be quiet, I replied, and Wallace smiled behind Sabbat's back, encouraging me to carry on. We have to buy time for my father and Ethelfrith to come.
Ethelfrith is not coming. He's no fool. He knows the stories of this army's size. There is no help on the way. We must pull back and defend the bridge.
The sun was now high in the sky. While the arguments and advice flowed, I glanced west towards the mountains, and then north beyond the Welsh companies. I was surprised to see a glint of sunlight glancing off metal some miles away. I looked again, thinking I may have imagined the sight. But again I saw it. Beyond the open ground there were some woods. I was now certain that troops were hiding there. I was just about to try and get someone's attention when Harold barked out some orders and Ethelric nodded helplessly. Harold and Wallace had got their way. Sabbat threw a dark look at me and stomped back to his men. Wallace gave me a pat on the shoulder, and then he and I went jogging back towards the company.
"Ready, lads," he shouted. "Here we go."
Chapter 14. The Battle of Cattraeth. Wallace organised our company into a battle formation of three lines. Veteran warriors, like Grettir, stood in a line to the rear to bolster the men in front and to give advice and encouragement during the fight. In front of them was a line of young warriors for whom this was their first battle. Edward Cuthbert and I were here with the other youths we had trained with over the last few years. Although we had fought a few skirmishes, including the desperate, confused fight at Calcaria, I would soon learn that a full battle is a different story. In the front rank there were 20- and 30-year-old men. These were more experienced than us, as well as being fitter and stronger than the veterans. Dotted along the front line, a small group of these warriors were formed up into a triangular formation pointing away from the main shield wall. These wedges were made up of the strongest and fiercest fighters. Their job was to try and cut into the enemy's shield wall like teeth and break it asunder. Nearest the enemy, 50 yards in front of us towards the crest of the hill, Cuthbert and other skirmish troops were positioned. I noticed that my friend was hopping about nervously, but at least he already had his bow held in his hand. Cuth was always calmer when he held a bow. Behind our battle line stood our captains with their household warriors gathered about their battle standards. I was just in front and to the right of Wallace's standard. It was a white wolf on a background of green. When the wind caught it and it unfurled, it seemed as if the wolf was charging across the plains towards its prey. Harold now walked along the whole army and inspected us. Ethelric himself did not seem to be sure what to do, and did not object when the Earl organised the six companies, so they now formed a continuous line 3 or 4 men deep, and perhaps 100 men wide. Our company was second from the left. Wallace had told us that we were going to attack the rear of the Almontae force. On hearing this news, there were many smiles amongst the Wixton company, as men saw a chance for revenge on those who had attacked our homes, or a chance to even a few scores from Calcaria. However, some of the older men grumbled and looked surprised. "We might indeed," they said, "be able to gain an advantage over Samlan's men, but what if we did not surprise them? Overall, the Welsh had more men than us, and things could turn against us very quickly." Nevertheless, we prepared ourselves for what was to come. Most men had a mouthful or more of beer, and they had carried from here Forwick. Several uttered prayers to the Woden or the Valkyries. I did neither, for I realised that I was finally going to fight in a battle. Here, my childhood dreams had come true, and as this fact dawned upon me, my mouth suddenly felt very dry, and my throat tightened. I had fought before, of course, during the raids on the villa and the escape from Calcaria. But, in both cases, it came on so quickly that I scarcely had time to think. Today was quite different. We took some minutes preparing ourselves, and a man has a chance to think in that time. Visions of home come to you. I thought of my mother and Suniva, my sister, staring after me as I left. Images of happier times flashed in my mind, feasting in the great barn, laughter and games in the firelight, obscure riddles by the bard Lila. A glimpse of Aedh looking beautiful and alluring in the half-light, and the memory of a kiss. On the brink of battle, a man is afraid. You fear injury for the pain it might bring. You fear death for the uncertainty of it. You fear failure for the shame it would carry with it. Out in the open, Cuthbert looked like a hunted rabbit. His eyes were wild and his head was jerking left and right, as if searching for a way out.
Perhaps, like me, he could not quite take it all in. But then he blinked, shook his head, and started stringing his bow. Edward, standing next to me, appeared keen and excited. There was never much space for thought in my friend's mind. Right now, I was certain that only the songs of the poets were in it. Looking at him, I experienced a moment of perfect clarity, and two thoughts came to me. Firstly, this place is where Edward belonged. If he survived, it would be in battle that his life would have meaning. Just as clearly, I realized that this was not true of me. Ironic, given the fact I would spend much of my life on one battlefield or another. But all I wanted at that moment was to find Mildreth and go home. In front, Ethelric, Harold, Sabbat, and the other lords were apparently satisfied that we were ready and waved us forward, but signalled for us to move as quietly as we could in order to increase our chances of catching the enemy by surprise. When we were just below the crest line, Ethelric did not hesitate, but marched briskly off in front of us towards the enemy. He did not lack for courage, I will give him that, but he would surely be cut to pieces by the enemy before we could reach them. Harold saw this too, and he intercepted the prince and escorted him to a safer place behind Wallace. Then Harold waved his army and pointed his sword over the crest of the rise in front of us. The captains ordered us forwards, and we were off to attack the foe. Overhead, the sun was climbing to its highest point. The skies were clear and blue. Birds swooped and soared, enjoying this perfect summer's day. Meanwhile below, the killing was about to start, for the Battle of Cattraeth had begun. "Form up! Form up!" hissed Wallace. The call was taken up by some of the older men, who passed it on in hushed voices. We moved closer together, and then turned, angling our bodies so that our left side was facing the Welsh, bringing our shields to bear. We overlapped our shields with the men on either side, trying to maximise the protection these boards of wood offered. Only a few of the men along, with lords like Ethelric, Sabbat, Wallace and Harold, wore armour made of interlinked chains and metal, strong enough to deflect sword blows. The rest of us trusted in our shields, the whims of fate, and the courage of our fellows. I was lucky in that at least having a helmet made of bone and wood. It felt loose and I pushed it down on my head. "Spears overhead!" ordered our captain. We took our spears and held them halfway along the length by our right hands. Our elbows were bent, so the spears were held at the level of our shoulders, upon which, for the moment, we rested them. Across the small space of a few hundred yards, our enemy had still not noticed us, intent as they were upon the assault on the camp, although a few heads twisted this way and that, perhaps seeking the source of some new noise they had heard. The Welsh, though, were clashing their spears against shields, trying to frighten our men in the fort. Unlike us, they made no attempt to minimise the racket, and this noise pretty much drowned out our own. Once we had passed over the crest line, I could now see an exchange of arrows between the Welsh attackers and our fellow Darens in the fortress. Here and there, the bolts hit home, and the first deaths of the day were occurring. But, for the most part, the arrows bounced harmlessly off shields. We advanced another 20 paces, with Harold leading our company so as to hit the rear of the enemy line. For a few heartbeats it seemed as if we would achieve total surprise. Then one of the Welshmen turned and moved away from his army and started fiddling with his breeches, looking for a place to relieve himself. He glanced up, and his face fell as he saw 400 warriors heading straight for him. For an instant he just stared at us in shock, but then let out a cry of alarm. More faces turned, and suddenly the Almatae were all bellowing and pointing. The game was up. We had been seen. A moment later there was a shout from a small hillock not far from the Almatae, and upon which the Welsh lord stood, and I could see one of them was gesturing our way. I felt an icy chill shoot down my spine as I recognised the face. There he was. There was Samnin, and he was standing next to three or four other princes and kings directing the battle. One of the kings wore a shining gold-coloured breastplate of solid metal, and his arms and legs were also sheathed in mail, but not the sort that our lords wore, which were made of rings of iron. These appeared to be more like the scales of a fish, with each scale overlapping the one below it. Such a rare and precious suit could not be worn by anyone else. This had to be Owain. Owain turned to a warrior standing behind him, and the man ran towards the back of the Welsh army, where they had a few reserve companies following up the leading troops. He soon had them angling out towards us, and in their urgency they moved so quickly that it now became obvious that we would not reach the Almaty before these other companies reached us. With a roar, Harold halted us and prepared to defend against the attack. The Welsh were closer now, and I could make out their faces and pick out individuals, some of them strong, experienced veterans, some, like Aidan, Edward, Cuthbert and me, in their first battle. For how many of us would it be our last, I wondered. More Welsh companies came towards us. They had for the moment abandoned their attack upon the fortress, leaving only two companies to watch the walls, the rest were coming our way. Without anyone noticing him go, Ethelric had moved to a small rise in the ground, so that he could easily be seen by all present. He was frankly hopeless as a commander. He had no grasp of tactics and could not make a decision and tried too hard to please everyone. But there was one thing he could do. He could make a bloody good speech. "Warriors of Dara, today I call you to fight bravely. This is not a fight we had wished for. We had lived in peace, happy to farm and to trade and to remain secure within our borders these last 15 and more years. Now a threat has come to our pastures. The Welsh would drive us from the lands our fathers fought for and won." He did not mention that it had been our race who had originally taken the lands from the Welsh, but that was not a thought for today. Today, Ethelric stirred up our hatred with his simple message. "Their raiders have burnt our land, slain our warriors, and raped our women. If they are not stopped, they will come and try again." He paused while some amongst us shouted, "Never! And let them try!" He then continued, "Some of you might wonder why you came here so far away from your homes. Is this your war? Some of you may wish to be elsewhere, but I say this to you. Unless we join together and be rid of this menace, none of us will ever be safe. The Welsh are united in an alliance to drive us away. This place is where they intend to start, and it is this place that they will be stopped." We crashed our spears against our shields and shouted our oaths that we would destroy the Welsh enemy or die trying. The enemy were close now, and the prince moved back to stand near Harold. Then we waited for the attack to come. The Welsh halted but 50 yards away, and then, to our surprise, they began singing.
"They are calling to their god to defeat us," Grettir said. "I have heard them sing like this before."
Not far away, Ethelric heard his words and turned to us all. "Call to Woden, men of Dara," bellowed the prince. Grettir and the other veterans began pounding their own shields with their spears. Soon, our entire company took up the beat, followed by the companies from Eorforwick. Then we began chanting,
"Woden! Woden!"
Woden was worshipped at the temple at God Nunningham, as well as the shrines in many villages, and most of our people trusted in him. The chanting went on, becoming louder and louder. It did battle now with Christian hymns sung by the Welsh to our fore. Whether pagan or Christian, the purpose was the same, to put courage into our souls, to set the hearts pounding, and to make us believe we could not lose, that we could not die, indeed, to fire us up to a fever pitch. Then the slaughter would begin. Suddenly there was a great shout from the enemy, and as one they moved towards us. A handful of archers and slingers ran ahead of them, trying to weaken our line by killing or wounding as many of them as they could, so that when the shield wall arrived, the wedges could bite into the weak spots and cut us apart. Cuthbert and a couple of dozen of our skirmishers exchanged shots with the enemy archers, and also fired at the mass of men bearing down upon us. In the scale of this battle, it would make little difference, I thought, until a moment later when a sling stone missing the front row glanced off my shield and ricocheted away from my helmet. I was stunned by the blow and staggered backwards into Grettir, who caught me and held me up until my head stopped spinning. When my vision did clear, the first thing I saw was an arrow taking the warrior in front of me in the neck. He collapsed back onto my shield and slid gurgling and choking onto the ground where, after what seemed like an eternity of thrashing and twitching, he finally died. The warrior to his left looked down at him, shrugged, and then picked him up by his tunic, heaving him forward to form an obstacle to the attack.
"Close up! Close up!" came the cry from the rear, and the warrior was forgotten as the front rank moved together.
The Welsh were closer now, so that I could make out their features as they advanced. A rugged, scar-faced old veteran scowled at us in rage, whilst next to him a gangly-limbed teenager quivered and shook in fear as he tried to hold a shield that was too heavy for him. All men are just human in the end, and their army had its fair share of anger, rage and fear, just the same as ours. Yet, the simple truth was that they had more men than we, and they were coming right at us.